Hi everyone, and welcome back to the Gentleman's Talk. I don't know why, but I like doing that. I practice that all the time when I'm out and about, how I can introduce myself a little bit. It's quite interesting. The crazy world of a James Little John's brain, shall we say. Anyway, I digress. I know that I say that quite a lot because I do often get commented. I must comment again. I love this bit. But you can tell who listens to my podcasts. Obviously, because, you know, the people that listen to them that I interact with are very close friends of mine. But I was talking about the interesting conversation with my friend Nelly the other day. And it really became sort of kind of, it sort of, you know, bolstered, there's a new word for you, it bolstered that original view and that original topic about how he, you know, how he talks like me, or not like me, but, you know, says some of those new words. You know, there's we often say underpin and caveat and stuff like that. So it is really interesting. But my mate Kieran started doing the same. He was talking on the conversation, but he says it in such a way now, it's almost like natural language to him. It's really good. It's funny. It makes me smile. It really does make me smile because I really love English. I love the way that you can manipulate words to make them sound a little bit crazy. I've got into as well old English phrases. Just started like learning about that. I don't know why, just old words, they just really interest me. anyway, something I may chuck in. I may chuck into the mix. You know, you never know. Hold on. Sorry, I was going to move on. But I couldn't move on. I had to find the site that I've been looking at recently, just because, like I said, English really intrigues me and I have to share this. So I jumped onto Business Insider, a little sideline. I've sort of kind of looking at small investments in shares and things like that at the moment on this app called Plum. probably become quite relevant in the topic I'm talking about today as to why I'm a bit like this. But anywho, yeah, Business Insider, because I was looking for some information and I was like, oh, this little bit come up, and it was about old English language. And I'd already had it in the back of my mind, and I've sent a few text messages to my friends talking in that old English language. It's quite funny. But I've come across a few words like grubbling. The definition, like groping, except less organized. You know what I mean? It usually refers to pockets. So I'm going to grope my... what are you doing? I'm grubbling my pockets. Do you know what I mean? Here's one good. Snollygoster. You fucking snollygoster. A shrewd, unprincipled person, especially a politician. Quite relevant at the moment, don't you say? In the fucking thing. Oh, piss off, you fucking snollygoster. Oh, here's another one. Zwodder. Yeah, zwodder. Z-W-O-D-D-E-R. Zwodder. A drowsy and stupid state of body or mind. Typically, probably getting smashed, but it says here, without my morning coffee, I remain in a zwaddler all day. That'd probably be good enough for my brother. Actually, I think he'll probably adopt that. Here's another one. Woofits. So if you're ever thinking like, oh God, you know, I think the British say, I say British as I'm talking in third person, I'm not British. But when we get smashed, obviously, we know, we always say like, oh, I'm absolutely bungalowed, or I'm fucking gazebo. Oh mate, I was absolutely fucking leather brogued last night, mate. I don't know if that worked, but I just tried to chuck something in there. But next morning, you feel a little bit shit. So you're like, oh, I'm really hungover. No, you're not. No, you're not, mate. You're woofits. That's W-O-O, woof. F-I-T-S, woofits. So, example, water and Advils normally help when you have the woofits. So from now on, you're fucking using that word. Another one here, look. Groofling, to lie close. Ah, oh, do you fancy groofling in the bed, dear? Wrapped up in a comfortable looking manner. Used in ridicule. Look at him groofling over there. Piece of shit. Oh, you wanker, get up, you lazy piece of shit. Here we go. I'll do the last one before I fucking go on, because I could do this all day. I really am engrossing it. Humdurgen. No, I'm going to say that has hung. It's not going to be Durgen. Humdurgen. Yeah, but it will Durgen. Yeah, so that's what I'm going to say. That, I'm trying to fucking learn my own language here. This is absolutely hysterical. Hum Durga. So H-U-M. Dirty cough. Is COVID still fucking me over, you know? Hum Durga. H-U-M space D-U-R-G-E-O-N. An imaginary illness. Also, the thickest part of the thigh is nearest his arse. I don't know. That's the definition of it. So, an imaginary illness. Also, the thickest part of his thigh is nearest his arse. Even that's said in old English language, because I don't understand that, and I like English. Anywho, so... Oh, no! Here we go. So, I can't, because I've just seen this. Fudgel. So, the definition is pretending to work when you're not actually doing anything at all. There's a lot of people I've previously worked with that thought, fudgel. Do you know what I mean? Example, sometimes fudgeling can actually increase your focus. Now that would have been said and made up that second bit by someone who's a fucking fudgel expert. You fucking expert fudgeling bastard. Anyway, digress. Hold on, while I just shut my curtain and get myself comfortable. So, and we digress. We get back in the room. Back in the room. So, here I am. What am I here today for, James? Well, no real topic, just something quite prevalent about me. Something really, like, do you know what? I'm actually excited to talk about this topic because I've got so much to learn. I'm excited to add some... Look at that. Inconsiderate. Somebody's having to get arrested now. And it's going to be in the back. Oh, look at him. Proper us. I apologise for the background noise. The UK is quite a pleasant place. Anyway, so I want to bolster that and underpin that a little bit. You know, they're going to get these words in, bolster and underpin everything with regards to not just learning about myself and this thing. I spoke to you the other day about, you know, sort of prognosis and something. I want to talk about the journey, how I've got there, what happened, and instantly what has since this, you know, I mean, I literally found out Friday. So we're only talking, you know, not even a week away. There you go. Thank you very much. Do the job properly. Get there quicker. Hold on. And, so I'll start off. So basically, I found out last Friday that I was diagnosed, or I've been diagnosed, with ADHD. Now, I know that most people associate ADHD with, you know, troublesome children. Because it's not really something we would have thought about. It's not something we did think about in the 80s when I was young. But it is something that's, you know, considerably on the rise as we're learning about it. I think there's still a long way to go from just the small amount of information I've found in terms of developing past that. But what it has given me is so much in the sense that, you know, it's given me a little bit more direction. And what I did was, we all know, if you've been listening to me for, excuse me, I'll clear my throat. If you've been listening to me for, you know, the last 5 or 6 months, you'll understand, you know, we've been a journey. I've you know, been for a roller coaster of mental health illnesses. You know, I've diagnosed with permanent PTSD, depression and anxiety, you know, and I'm battling the depression like head on, like smashing it in the face to try and really get to the point where I can get off these tablets for the first time in 5 years. So I'm actively doing that so I don't have to depend on a tablet anymore. I'm trying to go it about myself. With that, I'm noticing as I'm clearing the fog from the depression side of things, what I am experiencing now is, you know, more anxiety coming through because I think I'm challenging myself more. I've got such a sore throat from this. I said, this COVID has really bitten me quite badly. I've not fully recovered yet, which is interesting. So I don't want it to turn into long COVID where I feel like this for a long time. Anyway, digress again. So, but it gives me focus because I'm noticing as I'm clearing depression, and I know what depression is. I told you, for me, it's like that fog over my mind. I'm clearing that fog and I am getting a lot more focus. But what I did notice in that focus was a bit more anxiety as the depression lifted, a bit more anxiety, but not just that, but like really a bit more scattiness has become more prevalent, more involved in my life. And I noticed that like I was sort of jumping around everywhere, wasn't happy, but this all of a sudden came around about a year or so ago when I started lifting the veil and going, fucking right, you need to sort yourself out, mate. Get yourself so that you can be a high-functioning, successful adult, and start enjoying your life, mate. Don't sit there and just muddle through life. Don't bounce from one day to the next hoping to survive. Don't do that. Grab it, grip it, go. And I've done that, and since I've done that, and I've lifted up the veil, so to speak, and the fog is clearing, I get days where there's still darkness, you know, I understand that. Depression, it doesn't go away. You have a little element of it, you know. It depends on how you deal with stress. Unfortunately, I don't deal with stress massively well. I mean, well, actually, that's a lie. I do deal with stress, actually. I say massively well. I deal with it really well in the sense that that's actually negative, because then I just keep like pumping stress into me, because I don't really feel the effects in terms of it doesn't affect my brain, it doesn't affect my focus with stress. If anything, I strive under stress. That's the problem. But what it does do is, because I'm focusing even harder, I actually lose the ability for emotions, so I react a lot harder. My body hurts a lot more. You know, I get real, really bad headaches and migraines. A bit where I'm sitting at the moment now, but I can't pinpoint why I've got stress. But yeah, so that's how it manifests in me. So if anything, I just get a bit more irritable. But in work, where you would see me function at my highest, you know, I'm going to be all singing, all dancing, which is why I've succeeded so successfully in the last 10 years, is because I basically turned stress into, you know, like a drug, like an adrenaline. It fed my adrenaline, kept me going, and I just strive for more and more and more and more pressure until ultimately, you know, it breaks. And it did, it broke, you know, I accept that, but you don't know it's going to break until it breaks, do you? So I lifted the veil, you know, I got stuck in and went, this is my year, this is it, this is, you know, I told you at the start of this in January, this was a change. This was me making a step out of my job that I wasn't enjoying, away from the life I wasn't enjoying, get to where I wanted to be with all the hard work I'd put in, you know, build relationships, build friendships, and just focus on being me, removing the negativity, removing the stress, and just start enjoying life. this journey is incredible. Excuse me, it's annoying me now. As I talk, let me just relax my talk and I should be okay. But what I have noticed is I'm kind of like, I'm lifting that up, and obviously other things are happening, because it's gonna lift. I'm gonna lift up the fog, and something's gonna appear that's gonna put the fog back down a little bit, and I'm gonna have to take on that challenge. And that's happened a number of times this year. You know, I've had challenges with work relationships, I've had challenges with friendships. You know, I've had challenges with relationships at home. I've had challenges with my family. Had challenges with my daughters. So for me, I constantly keep battling them, and sometimes they have to sit aside until I can get up the strength to fight them again. But what I'm seeing is, as I'm lifting the depression fog and pulling myself out the negativity and trying to harbour this positive mental attitude, PMA. I'm trying to, you know, instill so much positivity around me so that I don't have a chink in the armor. That with that is lifting me, it's lifting me naturally, but then at the same time, when they're not there and those things that I'm nurturing all the time, they can't be there all the time. My friends can't be there all the time. I can't be doing something every night. So inevitably, I drop down. And this is really annoying, sorry. I don't know why, it's just caught in my throat, like a little niggle. And ultimately, you know, they can't be there all the time. They can't function with me all the time. So what I'm having to do is just manipulate things as you go along to succeed. Keep in touch with the friends, keep involved with the friends, try not to lose touch with, you know, that kind of focus. But at the same time, acknowledging that you know, these, you are going to get the odd break. You are going to get, you can't be positive 24/7. It's, you need to rest from this positivity. If you walked around spuffing out rainbows out your ass all day, you know, eventually that's going to start getting really fucking tedious and you're going to just piss everybody off. So you need to manage your day. You need to be able to be happy, be focused, be sad. You need to embrace all those emotions. But they're normally triggered by something, so you just have to manage these things. And like I said, as I lift up the, you know, the fog, you know, things are arriving. But anyway, what I did notice was those little signs that were sat there. And this is more so the last year where I was still kind of struggling. I'm still making like a little bit rash decisions, you know, and like I'm focusing, but I'm constantly like looking forward. And I was like, there's got to be something there. And anyway, so I went and paid for this independent test, and it was just an independent, I think it cost me $29.99. Probably some people saying, oh yeah, you were mugged off, rah, rah, rah. Yeah, I probably would have done if I'd have done that test, paid $29.99, listened to it, but not done anything about it, yeah, that would have been a waste of money. However, I knew, I was like, right, I can understand I've got permanent PTSD, but PTSD for me is it's predominantly triggered around factors to do with cars. It is. And or going somewhere or having to be somewhere or having to drive somewhere with the pressure. And sometimes that does manifest over into my ability to react negatively, because I'm used to reacting negatively with the driving aspect, because that's where the crux of it is in terms of, you know, how my symptoms came about with the three car crashes and all the other things and the 3 or 4 years undiagnosed where I developed negative coping mechanisms, because really they weren't positive. So I did things like, say, quick reactions, snap reactions, violence, you know, kicking off and all that, all the arguments and, you know, tenacious and just disposable everything, you know, that was just the toxic things that I'd nurtured. And but anyway, as I accepted those, and I've accepted those over 10 years, and I've learned to live with them, and I've learned to, through cognitive behavior therapy, and fantastic, you know, fantastic work I learned through that, I managed to switch my negatives into positives. So I know I get into a car, I have to feel safe and comfortable in the car, I have to adjust the car perfectly with the right music, the right lighting, everything in the car has to be perfect. So I do sit in, I know when my car is a millimeter out in terms of the seat, I know, it just, someone's been here and they've not put it back right. Because I like to get into, I've got a big Audi A6, very comfortable, just like driving a nice 2 litre tank. And I feel safe in it. I know for a fact Audi's got a good reputation. Maybe not with engines or emissions, VW and Audi trying to screw us over for years. But hey-ho, that's a business thing. In terms of safety though, PK rating. So I aspired and to get an Audi. It's not a flash new one. It's an Audi A6, you know, it's 2010. So yeah, it's like 12 years old, isn't it? So one guy owner, private sale, really, really got an absolute bargain. Loved the car. And I get into it, leather seats, and it's like an armchair. It's set up perfectly for me. It's automatic, so I'm cruising. It's got the speed with the downshift. So I'm excited for it. So I've alleviated those pressures with PTSD, and I'm coaxing them through, and we still develop things. But as I'm getting more and more positive, as I'm not getting as stressed about situations, I was like, there's still something going on there. So anyway, digressed again. But I did this test, and what it did was I did the ADHD test, and it said you have ADHD, and out of the question set, I think there was like 15 or something like that, and It was a fair few months ago when I did it. And the results were, I was like 92% on something silly like that on the scale. And I was like, well, I want to kind of push this a little bit further. You know, I want to push this a little bit further. So I paid for a private. So I've done it on my own. I've paid for private consultations and I've gone through a really amazing company. And yeah, it was established through that side of things. And then as a third representative, I've gone through the NHS route just to get the clear direction from that side of things as well. So I was like, that's fantastic. So I've got three separate people telling me, you know, three of which, you know, the private one went to an independent board because that's what they had to do to sit the results. And the board was sat with four people. So that was actually four independent psychiatrists reviewing it. My doctor in the NHS. Okay, that's a little bit slower, but results were the same. I sat and had an interview with two ladies, and that then, once they made their sort of prediction, it then went to a senior psychiatrist who then looked at the results or through the 2 hour interview I had, and then said, had a 1 hour interview with me as well, so it's 3 hours, and then said what his prognosis was, and he was like, okay. And ultimately, what does that mean? I'm only just getting stuck into this, so I don't really exactly know what it means. You know, you get leaflets and all the other stuff with it. Like I say, I'm just kind of like dealing with the side of things in terms of learning from it, learning about myself again, how I can nurture it to make myself better, perform better, and ultimately manage it. Because it wasn't about, for me, putting a label on it, so to speak. I didn't want to identify as it or do anything like that because I don't want to. For me, this is like I said, I've had PTSD, depression, anxiety, and I'm trying to slowly flick those away. So, you know, depression's well and truly being fought. I'm five, almost 6 months into this battle, and I'm just like, yes. And I'm just developing myself all the time to bring coping mechanisms forward, to make it easier on a day-to-day basis through, as I've said to you, meditation, you know, yoga, reflection, so personal reflection, body mapping, all these things I do, and I do them religiously. And I don't sit there and praise about it all the time and talk about it too much. I just chuck it in there every now and then. But for me, that's my religious part. I have a structure, even to the point where my bloody daughter this morning, she had an exam, and there was some, well, I won't bore you, but there was some roadworks. So she had to go early because the roadworks were starting at 8. Her exam was at 8:30. Her bus would have got there late, rah, rah, rah. So I ended up taking it this morning. Now, to most people, that's fine. But the first thing I said to my wife was, well, that's something out of routine. I was like, because I've got to be back at work for 7:30 to try and sign on for 7. I just constantly thinking that's my routine. I walk the dog at 7:10. So it's that almost the OCD in me. I like structure. I like routine. I like being, you know, I like things on point. That's the way I've always been. It's the way I can't help that. But anyway, so I was just sort of kind of managing that side of things. And I was kind of like, fucking hell. Anyway, like I said, I'm trying to flick them away. So I was trying to manage everything. And I was like, right, anxiety next. Okay, I'm going to start pushing myself. And I don't think, the more I think about the anxiety aspect to me, I don't really think it's too much anxiety about the actual situation. It's just about, I don't think I'm going to get anything out of it. So I don't want to be rude because I'm not a horrible person, but 9 times out of 10, I'm just like, I don't want to do it. This isn't going to be fun for me. I'm going to struggle. It's kind of like the battle. I don't know whether it's anxiety. I mean, when I've spoke to these symptoms and I've said about my previous symptoms from psychiatrists, they've gone like, yeah, you get anxiety. And I'm like, well, fucking hell, I can't be arsed with anxiety. I don't want it. I can't be arsed with it. You know, take it away. And PTSD is something I work on. It's something I literally manage all the time. You know, I don't do certain things, etc., etc. But anyway, I kind of got to the point where I was like, there's got to be someone else. So I went through this channel, gone through these routes, and I've paid for it myself. Nobody's known about this. I've not told anyone. This is literally, in fact, the first person I told was obviously Kieran. You know, I said to him about it, and I genuinely haven't told anyone else. Purely because I'm still dealing with it. So it's kind of like, but then at the same time, it's a bit counterintuitive to then talk to it on here. But they would be like, oh, they put them first. And I'm like, well, everybody's first to me. The reason I'm talking on here right now is because it's a way of me talking about it. I'm trying to process it. And ultimately, that's what this podcast is about. It's about me trying to learn from myself. So I love this bit. This is a bit where I'm talking to you and I'm learning as I talk to you. I will get around to talking to my friends, but at the same time, I haven't even told my wife, so, or my parents. So literally I spoke to Kieran, I think on the, I can't remember, Saturday or Sunday, I think it was. And we were just talking. He rung me up and I just went, yeah, mate, I've fucking... Because we spoke about it before. And, you know, it was ironic that I went, like I said, I've said this in a previous podcast, I went over to my brother's, and even his wife said, you know, we've spoken, you've got ADHD, you know. And it's like ironic because at the time, you know, I was actually going through the process and waiting, and it was kind of like more people saying it. And I was like, okay, well, I you know, and not in a negative way, but I don't really see a lot of my sister-in-law for her to sort of kind of understand my personality in that way, not in a negative way, but I assume she talks, well, I'd say she does. She'll talk heavily with my brother, who will explain symptoms, and probably, because me and my brother, we're close, we talk all the time. So he's probably expressed it with her and spoke about it, and they've probably come to the prognosis themselves, you know. And it was the same when I went round to Kieran's house. And, you know, even his wife turned around and said, yeah, we think you've got, like, ADHD. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. So it played on my mind, and at the time that these have said, this has only been really sort of kind of relevant the last 3 or 4 months where people have actually spoke about it, and I didn't know. So I've pursued it, and I was pursuing it while they were talking to me, because I was like, it's got to be something wrong with me. And I don't mean wrong with me, because it's not wrong with me, but I wanted to understand why I'm fighting other elements. And, you know, it's not kind of, you know, I wasn't beating it as quickly or as successfully as I wanted. And I was like, there's got to be something wrong. So anyway, and that's where I've come to the conclusion. So I got that conclusion on Friday. I haven't really done a lot with it, but that's purely because at the moment I'm sort of kind of reading through all the data and all the sites and stuff like that. And I'm like, fuck, I can't be asked to read. And then lo and behold, obviously because I've told my best mate this, I was like, dude, he's come straight back to me and literally said, you need to listen to this Audible. He's looked at it and he's got it on at the moment, and he's like, it's literally you. I'll stick it in the description for the podcast. It's on Audible. It's absolutely, like, I've just read the description of it, and from what we spoke on the phone for about half an hour earlier, and from what we said and what he was saying, you know, it's helping him. So, but I was humbled because, number one, he's taken the proactive approach to learn about me, learn about the illness, to see how he can help me, which is fucking incredible, because, you know, it is a recognised illness. You know, it's understandable. It's going to be hard. And I suppose from the outside in, you know, and as I talk through these battles with all my mental health, and as I talk through things, we'll learn more. And it's kind of like, I mean, I've even got, so this is like, I'll just give you a little snippet of, like, from the NeuroHealth that I've been reading a lot of my data from, and just to try and understand it. And one of the big things I will caveat and sort of kind of underpin the whole thing is, predominantly now we learn about this early. So kids get it now. And like I said, we associate a lot of this within children that, you know, and bearing in mind, it's only about sort of kind of 4% of the population suffer from ADHD. Like I said, we normally get it diagnosed in children. So we can understand, because they don't know how to control their emotions, so it's quite easy to pick up. But when you're a 40-year-old adult, when you're coming along with these problems, and you've kind of completely missed the education system, and learning about the signs and stuff like that now, and what the, you know, the symptoms are and what can be caused, it would explain a lot about my childhood. And it's kind of a bit crazy that if I'd have known about it then, I could be a completely different person now. So it really does, like, make me respect the fact that we're learning about these things. Yes, my time has been missed to a degree, but I'm 40, so it might put things into perspective as I'm working in my adult management career aspect of my life, the way I want to progress through. Like I said, I'm a very caring person, and, you know, I always want to see people succeed. So it's kind of like I'm working in that situation, so to make sure I don't do anything that's going to unhinge that process, I've got to kind of manage it. So here it is. It says here, like, what is ADHD?
An attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is a neurological condition that begins in childhood, and this may continue as the child ages. According to, and this is an American study, so I have to remember the CDC. According to the CDC, it is one of the most common neurodevelopmental disorders in kids today. So, obviously, I've missed that. I've missed all the being sort of kind of, you know, picked up by a child and kind of looked at. So I went straight to, like, the adult section, because there's an adult section. So since adults are more difficult to diagnose with ADHD, look for an entire... Sorry, the neuropsychologists, they're the ones, not psychologists, neuropsychologists look for an entirely different set of symptoms than those usually seen in children. Adult males often exhibit subtle signs that manifest in their daily activities. And I'm going to give you some of those subtle little hints. So you are more likely to speed when driving vehicles and may cause accidents. Well, I know that I didn't cause those other accidents, but at the end of the day, I do speed. I don't for the sake of the law. But I do ride fast. I ride a motorbike. I accelerate. I've actually had about three crashes on motorbikes. I've had one crash on a scrambler motorbike. I've had three other crashes in cars, plus my three head-on collisions. So, you know, you can look at the stats there. Another one, you have trouble listening and focusing on conversations. Absolutely. I cannot focus on one conversation. It drives me insane. I'm everywhere. Absolutely everywhere. You have difficulties building and maintaining relationships. 110%. I hate maintaining relationships, and that's where I've struggled with friendships. I mean, it's like you said, it's a surprise. I've known Kieran 28 years because I'm just like, I'm dipping in and out all the time, and it's kind of really hard. You are often restless. I'm restless all the time. Like I said, I was having a conversation with Kieran earlier on where we were talking about this, and rightly so, as he was talking to me, I was invested. I can almost talk about the whole conversation because I was listening, but at the same time I was looking at my trees and I found greenfly. Shit, that's just reminding me I've got to go and get the greenfly spray for my tree. It's got greenfly on the tree, and I was pulling the end caps, like the little on pines, they've got a little cap on them and you take them off and then the fresh pines open up. So I was taking that off and I was trying to explain to him, you tend to be a master procrastinator. That's 100%. That's absolutely. You are not in control of your emotions. Exactly. You found school to be hard as a child. Absolutely. I literally could not stand school. My emotions are always constantly trying to control them. I'm like excited. I get angry. I get sad. The only thing I don't do is cry. But, you know, I fall in love, you know, really easily. There's a couple of ones that they did say you'll never hit every single one. But out of all of those, the only one that I didn't hit. So that was like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And out of those, the only one I didn't hit was you are rarely on time. But the one that says here you are rarely on time, that one there, and I'm highlighting it. Well, I was in the military. I was raised by the military. So, you know, for me, if you're 10 minutes early, you're late. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like that is the ethos that you're sort of kind of motivated for. You always turn up early. I always turn up 15 minutes before an appointment. If even my boss said to me today, I was on a thing, she was like, you joined early. She said, why did you join 15 minutes early? I was like, because I wanted to be punctual. And like, it just doesn't, that's the military institution in me. So that is already, because I've developed that through years and years and years and years of repetition, you know, and kind of been brought up with it. I didn't really get the time to be not on time because I was always on time. I had to be on time. My parents were strict in that sense. So I didn't develop that. And that was just because that was a natural aspect. My father was in the army, you know, I was always around the army. So it was always a very structured lifestyle. So even to the point where you go, you cannot maintain proper organization. Now, it says of items and thoughts. Sorry, so out of the nine, there was two I didn't. Now, again, straight away when I looked at that, and this is what I spoke to about psychologists or neuropsychologists, and I've spoke to them, is they said, you've been institutionalized. So when you were developing those skills, you cast your mind back to a podcast a little while ago where my dad used to every Saturday, you know, make us reorganize the wardrobes and present them properly. So very structured, very neat, very tidy, very, you know, that is why you look at me and my brother and we are fucking crazy OCD. So I haven't developed those two. So you still got 80%. So 80% out of it, I'm up the mark. But they would have probably developed if I hadn't have had something in place that was a natural process for my family to raise me. Because no matter what you've got and how your body functions as a sort of kind of a neuro sort of aspect, you still can fight those with the way you're brought up. And the more I've read into this, it is to do with a lot of structure. It does help. So structure does help. So for me, I literally straight away counteracted those with the regards that that's where I was raised. Now, when you cast your mind back to organisation of items, no, OCD, everything's nice. Bearing in mind, I was a painter for 21 years that literally my job was to get perfect lines. So my keen eye for detail has all been developed. It's just kind of come through. But then with the ADHD, which is offering a symptom now, it's kind of, I'm sort of kind of extra. It's just giving me that extra bit. I'm focusing even harder, you know. But the thoughts process, absolutely. I can't maintain my thoughts. I'm crazy all the time. One minute I'm fucking happy as Larry. Next minute I'm worried about what I've done or what I've said. You know, it goes crazy. One minute I'm sat there going, oh, yeah, I'll take a phone call. There's a fucking, I've got green fly. And then I'm like completely gone and I'm gone, shit. I need to find a way of writing that fucking down. So I've got to write stuff down more now because I'm crazy thinking all the time. But items are always organized because I've been brought up like that and rarely on time. That's why I get stressed from not being on time, because I've been institutionalized by the military way of thinking, in the sense that you can't be late. So it's crazy. So, you know, kind of for me, it's kind of like I've looked at those, I hit all those targets, and I look at the sort of kind of, you look at the less common, and I sort of nip over to the less common signs. You know, there's kind of always interjecting into conversations. I do that all the time. I even try to finish people's sentences as if to say, like, fucking shut up, I know what you can say next. A hobby of starting hobbies. That's what I do all the time. Literally, like, wakeboarding. I did it for a couple of years. I, like, a couple of trips of fishing, but bought all the gear. You know, I did a bit of my grass. I got fixated on the hobby of the garden, the grass. I'm fucking done with that now. I'm constantly, you know, I've done laser work. I bought a £500-600 fucking airbrush kit because I thought airbrushing was where I was going to go down. And it sat there fucking doing nothing. I bought a fucking drone upstairs that I've used about 3 or 4 times. It'll sit there. I bought a mountain bike when I came back from Saudi Arabia and was like, I'm going to buy a fucking top of the range mountain bike out of my bonus. It sat there fucking gathering dusk, singing and dancing £800 bike. And it was like, that was just, I was bouncing all the time. And another one here, always being on the phone. Adult males with ADHD are constantly distracted. Because of that, they have to fill the void. Constant phone is used to make an easy solution. Phone use gives males with ADHD a break from the boring daily routines. It also removes any feelings of delayed gratification. So there you go. I do that every fucking day, and I've done it since I've had a fucking phone in my hand. And it's crazy, like, when you look, and please, when I look at the book that I'm gonna learn from the book, and certainly gonna recommend it to my wife, my parents, probably, and hopefully my brother as well. He might even want to get into listening to it. Just to understand, I mean, it's not just about me understanding, but I was very humbled by the fact that, you know, Kieran has taken that proactive approach to go, okay, brilliant. He didn't know much about sort of kind of the PTSD side of things, or depression, the sadness. He doesn't really understand that, but he's been able to relate to ADHD. And I think probably because I think there was an element of something in the family. So he's probably trying to learn as much as he can about it. So it's going to work as a double-edged sword here. He's going to strike while the iron's hot. He's going to help him learn. Also, he's going to help you know, understand my past. So although we've been together as friends, well, I'll say it together. Everyone's like fucking knobheads. Although we've been friends for 28 years, you know, you kind of still coax through life. You put the we put these masks on, don't we? We hide ourselves. You know, we don't show our true selves to all the time to everybody. So there'll be elements that he doesn't know about, and there'll be elements that, you know, my wife knows about that no one else knows about, and vice, you know, elements that I talk to my father with that I won't talk to my mother with, etc. Elements I'll talk to my brother with that I won't talk to my friends with. You know, there's all sorts of stuff. So it's just, it's interesting that when you talk to those people and you get to understand the physics of what's going on in your body and brain, not only, I mean, there's nothing I can do about the past, absolutely nothing, but for you to understand ADHD, and if you know me, or you know your friend, it might put all of those years you've known him or her, but obviously this is a gentleman's talk, so I only refer to it in the tense of men, so I apologise. But if there could be a woman listening that's maybe thinking the same for her partner, I don't know. There could be something. But ultimately, what you're going to try and understand from this is you might be able to put those years of friendship, relationship, whatever it is, into context. You know, and one of the things that resonated with me when I was talking to Kieran was like, he was like, I just reflect back to all those years and what you've done and the paths you've taken, and it puts it into perspective into me, in it for me, you know. And it's like he said, if I'd have known, I would have helped you even more. I would have stopped you doing the things that you were going to do, because I would have been a sound advice. And that is so fucking important. I have to swear with that one. So fucking important, because as I'm learning, even myself and reading down, you are a time bomb. And just to give you some context with the book, it's called I think it's called A Hunter in a Farmer's World. I think it's called something along that lines. And basically, what the cusp of it is people with ADHD. In more as you grow older, it's the hunter's gene that is kind of lost, because as Kieran has rightly articulated to me perfectly, you know, if you're a hunter, you've got that acute extra sense, and we need these hunters in the world. And that's one of the biggest things I took is hunters are the ones that drive, and that's why I love being a leader, because I've got that hunter gene. And like Kieran said, we were on our 40th holiday last year, and we were walking down the path, and I went, shit, now do you see that spider? He was like, what? And it, literally at the corner of your eye, you see this fucking spider. It literally was out of nowhere. And it was like black, but with like a weird dot on it, like a reddish dot or something. And I was like, fucking whatever colour it is, mate, it's obviously fucking crazy. It's in Spain. It's been fucking drinking the local fucking San Miguel, and he's fucking angry, so leave him. But he was more astounded that I'd seen that. And that's it, that's the thing with me, is I'm constantly on the go. I can't settle. I'm constantly looking at every single detail around me, and I still take on stuff. And for me, like I said, going back to the book, it's farmers aren't like that, and we've all become as a race almost farmers, because we don't want to rush things. We don't need to go out and be hunters anymore, because we get food, you know, prepared in a field, packaged, put on our plates, and we eat it. That's, you know, there's hardly anything in between, unless you want to make something a bit different and cook dinner yourself. But Christ, we almost package absolutely everything up. Christ, I remember the days when I was younger, and you used to just get, you know, rusty carrots that literally, and I don't mean rusty like you've been putting it somewhere, you pipe down, son, you fruity bastard. Anyway, digressed. So, yeah, it's, I've lost my track now because I'm thinking about carrots going rusty. Shit, get out of my brain. But we used to have like a basket of rusty carrots, with loads of mud on them, because they were literally with the stalks on top, where they were just yanked out the fucking ground, you know, sifted or whatever, stuck in a barrel, pick them out, take them home, you know, top them and cut them, cut, you know, wash them and everything. You did all of it. And the waste then went into your, you know, bio bin at the end of you compost it. Compost tip at the end of the garden, you know? So now we get them, you know, cut, stripped, washed, you know, boiled, ready to eat. You know what I mean? They're literally like frozen, just microwave for 30 seconds and you're fucking chewing down on a broccoli tree. Do you know what I mean? It's crazy. So there's no aspect of needing that hunter gene. But again, there's people out there that still have that gene because we still need it. And that's what it's about. This book is about that. It's explaining. And do you know what the best bit about the book, and I've seen that in the synopsis for it, was the fact that they don't look at ADHD as a mental health problem. They actually put the positive spin on it in the sense that they manage it the right way. They actually look at the positives of having ADHD, as in, like, we need these people in the world, you know. Those drivers, they are the ADHD. If you look at any of the really, really successful people, and I'm not saying I'm going to be successful by any stretch of the imagination, but if you look at the successful people, like your Elon Musks and all that, you know, they'll all have an element of ADHD because it's the drive in them. It's the hunter in them. They're going for it. Businessmen, they're naturally like that. So, and like I say, 4% of the world has ADHD. So it's a very small, small minority. And there's obviously, I've looked into this. I've looked into the side of the medication, and they've said that you can get stimulants such as, methamphenidate or amphetamines. They use amphetamines, you know, to try and balance the brain environment and level the mood, because it is fucking nuts. It also allows neurotransmitters to fire appropriately, because that's the problem with ADHD. Or you can use non-stimulants like atoxamosin or bipropion. I don't even know that, and I'm fucking English. These medications are antidepressants, and they can be helpful if you have an adverse reaction to stimulants. So it's crazy how, when you reflect back to me, so I often, like, I've been on an antidepressant, and one of the things they did say to me was, that's probably why for the last 5 years you've been bettering yourself slowly and slowly doing it, because you've been suppressed by the antidepressant. And I was like, oh, okay. So they were like, it's probably a good balance for you. And, you know, I do have a mixture of kind of like the non-stimulant side of things. I don't like to kind of naturally relax me. And it's kind of like, for me, that is personally the only way to sort of stop firing and go to sleep and just relax. It's just absolutely fucking crazy. And that's why I get the other element, where when you're out and I go out, say, socialise, and I do eventually get out to socialise, I almost look at the stimulant then. I'm looking for the music, and I'm looking for the shots, and I'm looking for the party. Because, you know, like my mate says, every time we go out for a pint, he's like, I get to about like quarter of the way down, and he's like, you want to fucking go out now, don't you? I'm like, mate, I'm already, in my head, I've already had a porn star martini, mate. I am fucking balls deep. I'm in. I'm in like Jim. Do you know what I mean? And that's what I'm like, because I get the excitement and I just go far and away, and then I'm like bouncing off conversations. There we go. And breathe, James, and breathe. So it's crazy. I'm excited because I'm learning about myself. So here I am at almost 41 and I'm still learning about myself. It's amazing. And like I said, you know, by my friend understanding that, he can put my past in context and then even, you know, support me going forward. And that's what it's about, isn't it? It's about understanding what that brings, what elements to sort of kind of, how can you assist as a friend, and understand as a friend. Then if you're a true friend, you'll understand and you'll support them. And then you might see something happening and you're going, oh, fucking hell, you need to fucking chill out, mate. Or, no, let's take him out of this. Do you know what I mean? And there's so much. If you were really close to me, or even close to me remotely, and you know about my past, you'd probably be able to actually acknowledge it all and understand why I'm like I am. Like I said, it's not a negative. I'm actually, even as my friend said, it's a positive. We need these people in life. And that's what I'm going to learn. And that's the ethos I'm going to take forward. I'm not going to look at it as, that's what it is. I'm just going to take that forward. So that was my exciting news, really. And I want to talk to you a bit more. It's kind of like, just something I'm going to learn. And as I learn, I'm going to develop it even more. And I'm just really thankful that, you know, I'm able to tell you. I'm literally thankful that I hope my friends are going to, you know, got Kieran and hopefully others will want to jump on board and learn, you know, and we can just become a better, stronger network. And then I can sort of kind of hopefully develop that into my work role to hopefully slow me down a bit. You know, it was kind of, actually, I must underpin that, actually, because that's hilarious. While I talk about work, so I said a few podcasts ago that I told my boss that how I deal with work, because I don't want to forget things. I don't know if you remember. And I said to him, you know, I'd just like you to acknowledge an email. If I send you an email, can you please acknowledge it? Now, I've noticed that purposely he's not doing that now. He's actually not doing it. Which is fine. It's just fine because now I just ignore his emails. So all he's done is really like alienate himself, not alienate me in whatsoever, because I'm confident in my job. I know what I'm doing, so I can crack on. So if anything, he's going to come to me before I go to him. I can guarantee that, because I'll find a way around to do that. So, but he's actively not answering my emails today. And anyway, he came on in his little shitty... he's obviously doing a bit of email triage and realised I've been given this big project and... decided he wanted to phone me up at the end of the day and again asked me not to engage with my chain of command, shall we say, my manager. I had to go through everything through him. But not only that, he took great pride, and this is where I took offence to this, and it does affect me, and it probably will affect me going forward, but... I told him, as I've told you in my previous podcast, that I like to be, can you just acknowledge my email if you get it? That's what I said to him. And he was like, yeah, okay. And like I said, he's actively not done it. So I'm engaging with another guy in a project. We've been given this project task, and the email, he was CC'd in it, and I got the correspondence, so I responded, and it's moving forward. He took great pride in saying to me, oh, I've had a chat with Ed, and I went, oh, yeah, of course. I said, this was at, like, 4 o'clock today. And I went, oh, yeah. And he went, yeah, I've told him, just make sure that he sends you an acknowledgement email, yeah? And that's how he said it. And I went, all right. He says, you know, don't want to get you upset, do we? And, you know, that to me... And I'm a strong character, I really am. That to me didn't sit right, because I was like, so not only are you actually taking the piss out of my mental health, because you are, because I have to deal with this way so that I can be a productive person, and I pride myself on being successful at that. So I just asked for that little acknowledgement from you as a leader, to acknowledge my emails, just to say thanks, James. Courteous communication, and also acknowledging that I'm a very polite person, so I just class it as common courtesy. I didn't get that, and I haven't been getting that. But then to sit there in a meeting with me, and obviously he's got his knickers in a twist to a degree that I've been given this project, but to turn around to me and say, I'm not to go to the manager, and... I've told Ed, this other guy, random guy, I've told him that he's got to acknowledge your email. He doesn't want to get you upset. And then, but he was, like I said, he didn't say it in that way. He said it the way I'd said before. But just those words were like, okay, so you're patronizing me. You're belittling me, which I fucking absolutely cannot stand. And you're bullying me. So I'm like, wow, mate. You've gone for the trio there, sir. Well done. Well done. I'm not going to do anything about it, because I'm just going to let him do what he needs to do. I just will not engage. So now he's just really sort of made things working environment difficult, because it shouldn't be like that. But I've got no trust in you, mate. I've got no faith in you. You literally going to need me, mate. I've spent like so many hours on education, mate. I'm really not interested. I'll just succeed in my own rights. But it was interesting how, even though I told him in confidence, and I don't think he understands the word confidence, and he breached code of conduct to such a high level that it's unbelievable. So anyway, I don't know. It, you know what? I'm processing it now, and that made me really fucking mad, actually, because I'm just like, what's he done? This is me talking on the podcast. It made me, like, I'm fucking raging now that he's done that. Anyway. So interesting. Interesting going forward. I'm going to just find my notepad so I can get this off my brain so I can fucking sleep tonight, because I don't think I will otherwise. Anyway, so I can write it down in my little journal. Anyway, yeah, so there we go. That's been a crazy podcast. Crazy podcast. I've enjoyed it though, because going forward, I'm going to learn quite a bit. But I'm going to leave it there, because as you can tell, I'm fucking completely unfocused now, because that's annoyed me a lot, and it's just smashed me in the face like a fucking brick wall. Anyway, so thank you for listening, and you know what? I really appreciate your support. I really appreciate you listening to this little crazy guy in the UK. Just talking about his crazy mental health journey, but trying to sort of kind of explain and express that we can be open, we can be honest, and we all face these challenges daily, don't we? And there's shit challenges sometimes, especially when you work fucking hard, you know, and you give all you can to be a successful person. Anyway, I'm going to go before I end up trying to phone my boss and getting really, really fucking mad. And I don't want to do that. So thank you for listening. And yeah, chuck on some support. Please help share the podcast as well. That'd be really amazing. Let's get it far and wide. Let's get some more topics, some more projects to talk about. Look forward to hearing from you, and look forward to talking to you again soon. Take care, everyone. Bye.